Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey y'all, hour number 3 coming up here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Thank you guys for staying with me here on the Thursday, May 19th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas podcast, a part of the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all the great pods across bluewirepods.com. Greenlight with Chris Long, Spinsters with Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins. All kinds of great shows. Wide Receiver One with Chris Carter, Max Crosby. Yeah, Oakland Raiders defensive end's got a show with us now. All types of great content all across the Blue Wire Pod Network. So go check out all those great shows today. If you have not already done so, don't forget, folks, if you would like to support this very program, it's easy to do so. Just if you are an Apple Podcast or Spotify listener, hit that pause button and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on either of those apps, and help this show continue to grow and help more people find the show. Hour number 3, Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, comes on the program for the full ride, our college football show here on the Chase Thomas podcast. So always great to catch up with Matt on this edition of the pod each week. So we talked all things college football, the Pac-12 doing away with divisions, how that's going to affect the rest of college football, Dan Mullen's next job, Jeff Brohm and him flirting with his alma mater, and then some early lines that were released about the upcoming 2022 college football season. So we picked our 5 most intriguing early lines that we saw all across the board. There's a lot of them out there. So a lot of fun, as always, talking all things college football with Matt here on hour 3 of the Chase Thomas podcast. So follow Matt at Matt_W_Green and all of his great college football content there. You can also watch this very program on YouTube. Oh yeah, all of our stuff on youtube.com. Type in the Chase Thomas podcast, find it there. Tweet at me at Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And of course, you can always email this very program with any questions, any mailbag stuff, anything you'd like for me to read it on the show at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
Hello, and welcome back to the full ride here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am now joined by my good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, here on the full ride this evening. Matt Green, how are you,
sir? Doing well, sir. Doing well. It's good to be back. Good to be back again this week, talking ball. Always repping North Georgia. I love it.
Always repping North Georgia. That's what we do on this very podcast.
Today I'm actually repping USA. So okay. That's, you know, no one can hate on that, right? It's USA. It's enough said.
Yeah.
Dead air.
Yeah, I didn't know where you were going though, but I like
it. Fair
enough. But yeah, it doesn't even look like a USA t-shirt though, because it's got like a gray and black look to it.
It is gray and like navy. It's like the shield kind of, like the soccer type shirt, you know?
Now that you say it, bring that up, and now I'm thinking about all of your wardrobe choices over the years, Matt, and thinking back to North Georgia, our North Georgia undergrad days, I don't seem to recall you being much of a pastel, springy type color guy. I've never seen you in the light colors. You do a lot of dark colors, and then Georgia stuff.
You might be onto something there. I don't know. I've never noticed, to be honest.
I'm rocking a mango Columbia dry fit.
I don't have any mango shirts in my collection, but that also, like, I'm anti-orange. Like, there's nothing I would wear that's orange unless I'm like showing some spirit for like Lanier Longhorns. Like, my brother was a coach, eighth grade coach at one point there, and then my dad, like, now he helps out with, like, their varsity. Mm-hmm. But so that's the only way. That burnt orange Lanier, I would rock it, but that's the only orange I'll be caught dead in.
Hold on, that doesn't make any sense. You're a Tequila Falcon diehard. Not only are you North Georgia, North Gwinnett, you had a whole run of Norse there for a little bit, but no, you're in Tequila Falcon country. You can't be seen anywhere wearing some Lanier Longhorns in the local Tequila Kroger. You can't do it.
That's fair. I think they're like same region or something, but that's a rivalry. That's actually one of the games I went to, is when Lanier actually came to Tequila. But you know, blood, you know, I gotta rep my pops, you know. So if he's rocking the burnt orange, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me.
There you go.
Because my dad raised me that way. He had a shirt. I'm sure a lot of people have seen these old Georgia fan shirts. It says "Rednecks turn orange in the fall," and then it's got Tennessee, Clemson, Florida, and Auburn on the back of it. So it's how I was raised.
Well, I can't really talk considering I have a Waffle House hat with my Tennessee stuff. So I don't know. Waffle House will be in the top three, top five restaurants for me forever. You got to rep Waffle House whenever you can. This is a very Waffle House friendly podcast. This is also the debut of more art behind me. I don't know if you noticed this, Matt Green, but we've got Peyton. He's made his first appearance on the YouTube. So you can check that out on youtube.com. Chase Thomas Podcast. He's right next to Doc Rivers in a Hawk uniform. You know Benjamin Matlock, my guy, my favorite all-time TV character. And then we've got, for my family, my dad's favorite show growing up, guess what? Andy Griffith's show, The Men of Mayberry. This, I'm not even going to mention how much this thing cost back in the day when I got this. It took a little bit to get ordered and come in, but it's like metal, and it's super cool, but it's like an old set thing. I don't know. But you got Don Knotts, you got Ron Howard, got Gomer, so... There you go. I brought it all together. It's a very homey setting now behind us. So you got your flags.
Getting rid of like Jalen Rose vibes there behind you, like on that show they get Jalen and Jacoby. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what you're going for. I respect it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
big Andy Griffith guy. I see.
Yes. I think I just broke my toe doing this. The Air Force. They sent me a helmet.
Okay.
So how cool is that? So that's going to go somewhere. Haven't decided. So shout out to the Air Force football program for sending that over. But
it's a quality face mask, too. That's a nice helmet you got there.
Yes. There is not a great way to do that. So it was in a weird spot. But, yeah, I mean, building out the home office and all that good stuff, I want to make the – like, as we expand out on YouTube here and all that good stuff, I want to continue adding – to the home office. Matt, anything new with you in the last week? Anything new at home? Anything new with the pups? Having any other strange men cutting your grass? Like,
hey,
like that?
Birdie, not only that, he stays mowing just the back part of my yard. I mow the rest of it, but he, I'm not going to stop him. You know, that part would take me way longer to do than it takes him on the riding lawnmower. Mm-hmm. But earlier today, I see him out picking up pine cones. Like, on my side of the yard, like, or where yards come together, this guy's picking up pine cones, basically in my yard for me. Like, this guy, just Bernie, shout out. Quality neighbor. Had no idea what we were getting into when we bought this house.
Yeah, like a good neighbor, Bernie is there, as they say.
Oh, man.
That was pretty good.
Well done, well done.
Speaking of well done. Matt Green, Nigel the Nighthawk, our guy, he dropped off some news this week for us before we get into the main event. In the main event, we should mention that the top of this show is going to be some betting odds that FanDuel released, that bunch of games. Like, there's so many early odds here, and I just went through all of them, and there were a lot of them that caught me off guard and surprised me. So we're going to do our five biggest, most interesting early lines. They'll change. I don't think they'll change drastically, barring injuries and stuff like that. But it tells us where people see a lot of these teams going into this fall, and what we should expect and those fan bases should expect going into the 2022 season. But before we get there, The Pac-12 is scrapping its divisions starting this year. This is happening now. We talked on the pod last week that the ACC was moving towards this next year. And then the Pac-12 coming out of nowhere and just being like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and do this today. And it's another good reminder that so much of what we like to believe takes time. And it's like, well, it has to go through this process. We have to do this. So it's like when we learn with scheduling, you can schedule the week of the game and make it all work. You can do Coastal BYU that week. You don't have to schedule 10 years out. You don't have to do any of this. There's no, we don't have to keep doing this because you can get it done. And the Pac-12 was like, we're just going to change our model and do this differently this year. And look, I think this is the way to go. I think divisions have kind of outlived their use. I think in a lot of these conferences, shout out to the ACC and the Big Ten, we can't even name what they're called half the time and who's where. And there's just no reason for it anymore. The SEC is just too big.
I miss the legends and leaders.
I know, the legends and leaders. It's kind of silly, and we don't need to do that anymore. And the model of the two best teams in the end of the year face off in the championship game, some years they'll have already played in the regular season, some years they won't. And that's just how it should be. And the folks who are worried, it's like, oh, well, how does the Mizzou's and the Arkansas's and the Mississippi States and the Colorado's, how did they ever get back in if you're only going to do the best composite rating, the best conference rating? Because that changes things. It changes who represents it. But it's like, well, it'll be better games. And ultimately, the system is better when it rewards the best. And ultimately, that's what we want. We want the best games possible. And even if that means rematches sometimes, those are still the best games because those are the two best teams in the conference championship, which should be the point, right?
Yeah, for sure. And these conferences get so big, like that's why the Big 12 is just doing it well. Although I guess the Big 12 is going to have to do it differently once they get the four new teams. But they'll be a 12 team. They will be the Big 12 at that point.
Yes.
So I think it's, I can't hate on the Pac-12 doing it, except for it just seems weird before you adjust the scheduling, because you could just have someone that's in the Pac-12 South that's got a much more difficult schedule or vice versa, and two teams from the North make it in or something like that. You know what I mean? So it seems like until you balance out the schedule, you kind of have to keep the divisions as is. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense for like the big picture. I think that's really going to be the only way to do it. Like when the SEC, when you're talking about a 16 team conference, like you're going to have to just take the two best conference records, which essentially is what best winning percentage is saying. I guess if you get a game canceled, the percentage could be different or something. But that's essentially what it's saying. I think it seems like an overreaction in terms of like the fan reaction to it, because like it's not going to be that many, there's not going to be that many years where it was even really an option for, like, usually the team that wins the SEC East, SEC West, those are usually like basically the two best teams in the conference. Like there's some exceptions in there, and with multiple conferences, like the Big Ten is definitely one that the Big Ten East seemed much better than the Big Ten West. Seems like those are the two best teams are usually in that division. But it's just, I hate that we want to take so much off of the field when it comes to college football. It's like, while you might have your opinion on the East is stronger or the West is stronger, there are those instances where, like, they may be rare, but there's instances where there's a lot of good teams that can kind of beat each other up, and then the team that comes out of that division is actually a lot better than you think they are. Like, that sort of thing can happen a lot, and so it's, like, to have these lopsided, say if it's in the Big Ten or something, to have these lopsided conferences or divisions, and Wisconsin could win that, and you just decide to play Ohio State, Michigan part two, because they're the best two teams. Like, Wisconsin, you didn't play anybody. Whatever your opinion is, it seems like a slippery slope. Like, while you can do the divisions, it seems like you're playing all these teams. Whoever comes on top should be in the conference championship.
Yeah, I mean, you could sell me on just not doing the conference championship games anyway, but I don't know. I think we're just going to see more shuffling. Friend of the pod, Late Kicks, Josh Pate, he mentioned this. I think I was listening to this today, where he talked about one of the pros, because he's pretty anti-college football playoff expansion like myself, and he the one positive of expansion is that, like, you're going to see more teams scheduling out of conference, better out of conference schedules, because they're not as concerned about dropping an out of conference game early in the season to a good team, another Power Five team. So we're going to see more home and homes versus the travesty we just saw take place on the Tennessee football Twitter timeline this week, with Tennessee dropping the Provo trip for the Cougs to play in Nashville against Tony Elliott's Virginia Cavaliers, which we'll get to in a second. But I don't know. I just think it's more change, man. It's pretty wild. A lot of changes happening, and we have to keep an eye on that bill that's circulating in California. You and I are not legal scholars, so I'm not going to pretend to have like a strong take on the matter. But there's a good piece by Zach Barnett in Football Scoop that folks can go check out if they want to learn more about what's going on, especially ahead of Thursday's decision and what's going to happen there. But I don't know. I think it's kind of funny that I've gotten kind of conditioned to the daily, just like, what's college football going to do today? I'm hesitant to like even put together our show sheet, 'cause I'm like, I feel like there's going to be 9 other things the sport decides to do tomorrow that's going to throw everything up in the air, right?
Oh yeah, seriously. But I had another, it's like, stayed on this topic with Pac-12 scheduling. I'm not exactly aware of the Pac-12 as much as I am the SEC. Like, I'll admit that when the SEC was at the 12-team conference, they would always play 6 games against their division, or 5 games, I should say, against their division, and then 3 games from the other division. Right now, the Pac-12 is playing a 9-game conference schedule, right?
Mm.
So they're playing 4 teams from the other division.
Mm.
And are none of those locked? Are any of those like locked rivals like they have in the SEC? Are you aware, or are we just seeing 4 kind of a rotation of 4 teams? Like, you get 6 teams in probably every four years or so. They might play everybody home and home, I would think.
I'm really not sure off the top of my head.
I'm not 100% sure how they have the scheduling set up, but if you are one of those teams that maybe avoids some of the better teams in the Pac-12 North or something this year, say I don't have USC and like Utah's schedule right in front of me, but if they did avoid the better teams in the Pac-12 North, and then they both end up having records in the best team in the Pac-12 North, just based on the schedule and who they played, it just wouldn't seem right for both of them to get into the conference championship. And I honestly think the rematch is almost would go against somebody. Like last year, if we're in 2020 or something, if we're going, although granted, I don't think A&M and Florida were tied, but hypothetically, if they were, bad example, I guess, because A&M beat Florida. But say Georgia and A&M were tied and they didn't play. If A&M has a loss to Alabama and Georgia has yet to play Alabama and they have the same record, it seems like the rematch would almost go against that team. It's like, well, we saw you play them. We haven't seen them play them yet. You know, like, I don't know. It's we don't want to see the same games. Like, we don't mind seeing if they're the best teams, but if there's a debate on who the best teams are, like, I don't think anyone would have minded seeing, you know, LSU Alabama Part 2 back in 2019, but Georgia was also a 11-1 team ranked like number 5 or something at that point. It's hard to justify Alabama getting a second shot at LSU, especially since I think Alabama lost to Auburn too the week before, but regardless, I think the rematch might almost, it feels like that might should be the second or third tiebreaker. Like, if we're trying to get to it, it's like, I don't know who to pick. You guys already played them. Let's pick someone else.
I mean, my gut is to follow. Does FCS, they don't do conference championship games, do they? Unless I'm mistaken, I don't think they do. In FCS, they just jump right into the playoff format. And I mean, that's what they do in high school.
Is that right?
High school, you win your region and then you go into the tournament. Like, you go into the playoffs, like, you just move on. You're like, yeah, winning your region's cool. And it's a big deal for a lot of programs. But ultimately, you jump into the playoff pool and you move forward. I think it's just kind of silly that we do the conference championship games. I would rather, if we expand the playoff, I would get rid of them.
We're already, I feel like the worst part about college football compared to college basketball is there's such a limited way to measure like tangible success. Mm-hmm. And I feel like conference championships, so you can have all these, you know, smack talk like, oh, well, you guys haven't won anything. It's like, well, we win 80% of our games, right? Like, that's, we're a good team. We haven't won a championship, but you still have a conference championship. You still want those accolades, like those achievements. Like, if you get rid of conference championships, then literally the entire sport, all we care about is the playoff. And every game that's not a playoff implications is like an irrelevant game.
But that's what they're inching towards anyway. That's what they want. Just give them what they want. Let's just stop the charade.
That's not what we want. That's not what we want. Some people might want that.
It's not what I want.
You need conference championships.
Well, here's my other at. Here's what I'll also throw. And it kind of speaks to what you're saying about the body blow thing. If we expand the playoff and then you have the top two best teams in the SEC, what we're going to see, and this is something that I think if every program's honest about it, it's just depth is going to be the champion year over year from now on. Like, there's no path to you contending seriously. There was already a shallow pool of realistic contenders in the 14 playoff or even in the BCS era. But if you do best team, like, it was a break for Auburn to get Mizzou in the SEC title game. And sometimes you need those.
Well, but remember, Missouri, I think they lost to, like, Toledo or someone mm-hmm. early in the year, right? But they were, like, ranked number 5, number 4 going to the SEC championship. Like, they were a really good team that year. They weren't as good as Alabama. But,
right. Or but, that's what yeah. I'm saying. They weren't as good as, like, several other SEC West teams that year. And my that's theory fair. Is that, like, we'll see. It's just going to be hard. So if you're asking an SEC program to run the gauntlet in the SEC, a 16-team SEC with Oklahoma and Texas in it, then play the best team at the second-best team in your conference, beat them two, and then win 3 consecutive Power 5 games, basically, and all some of them at home, maybe in neutral site. The only rosters that can handle that kind of wear and tear and that much of a grind are going to be the best of the best, the deepest of the deep. It's just going to be extremely difficult to ask a lot of these programs to go on that kind of run. I think when you hear like folks like Saban talk about parity, and people just jump on him for anything that he's saying, but like ultimately I get where he's coming from, and I think a lot of fans would prefer that, but the expansion of college football playoff is going to have the inverse effect there, where I don't think when you switch to this model, you do the pods, you do more in-conference games if you're an SEC program. So you have 9 SEC games plus the SEC title game plus 3 playoff games. You're Mississippi State, you're Arkansas, you're whoever, you're a good program, you're an Ole Miss. You can have a great year. You can finish number 2 in the SEC one year. Guess what? You get through and you're still in the playoff, and then you're like, all right, we went 10-2 this year. We won an upset against Georgia in the SEC title game. What's our treat? Penn State on a neutral site, and then another SEC team in round 2, and then the national title against like Ohio State or something. Like, it's just, that's asking a lot. Somebody has to win it, but it will just be a select few. It will be a very, very small number. And I guess that's kind of how it's always been, but I think it will grow even smaller, and I kind of will bet on who wins it every year based on who I think is the deepest team in college football that can withstand the most injuries.
Yeah, but I mean, that's already kind of true. Part of who wins it every year, right? I mean, it's like college football has always been a top heavy sport. I just wonder how they're going to do the tiebreakers, because like in the SEC, like for example, like 2003, SEC East, Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida all, I think, lost one or two. They lost the same number of conference games and all beat each other, essentially, lost to the other one. And I think they went by the BCS standings. Same way with Texas A&M, or Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and Texas in, what, 2009, 2008, mm-hmm. When all of them were so good. I think they went by the BCS standings, which kind of sucked, because it's like, well, we all beat each other, and the rankings are basically going to be based on the preseason rankings, right? That's who's going to be at the top. So you can't really go college football ranking in that scenario, because there's people, like there's a committee like picking the college football playoff. It doesn't seem as pure as like, oh, let's let the computers decide kind of who amongst these 3 teams is the best since they all beat each other. It's like we're letting a committee decide. Like, I don't know. It's like we're not... While everyone else is looking at the top 4 or something, they're getting shifty with this number 7 and 8 and 9 or something to determine conference divisions and things like that. I don't know. It would just I'm curious to how they're going to do it. They're going to have to do something when it comes to these new bigger conferences. But I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Dan Mullins, next coaching job. He, friend of the pod, Graham Coffey, broke this one earlier. Was it this week? I don't know. Time. I've been like in a black hole just doing my graduate school finals here at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And I've just been like in a bunker and living in the library and just barely getting little scraps like Oliver Twist. Just like, can I have some college football news, please? And just a little bit. Just
I want
a little
some
bit.
More.
Yeah, that's me. But, you know, I thought this was pretty interesting. And folks, again, people just have their narratives and have their opinions on Dan Mullen. They're like, oh, how the mighty have fallen from Florida SEC Power 5 head coaching job to analyst or whatever his position is going to be, assistant, I think, or some kind of helper now at Lake Oconee Academy. I think his son plays there. And my response was, it's a pretty good gig. He gets the buyout money. He already lives in the lake. He gets to spend time with his family these next couple of years. He gets to have a stress-free job, and he can just become an Alabama analyst whenever he wants. Like, there's no reason for him to jump right back into it. Enjoy your life, man. College football is a mess right now. I would sit this out for a little bit. I would just be like, let NIL and the transfer portal continue to figure itself out, and I'm just going to enjoy lake life, run some fun offenses, spend time with my family, and ride my jet ski. I salute Dan Mullen for this strategy this fall.
That's all fair, for sure. I kind of thought the same thing when I saw people talking shit about him. It's like, we all love to talk shit about Dan Mullen, but yeah, literally this guy is going to be living on his $2 million house on Lake Oconee. And right when I heard this story too, I was like, there's no way he's going to be the offensive coordinator. He's mm-hmm. just going to be like some guy that's like helping out with the team, like unofficial title or whatever. He's just, I'm sure he's just going to provide insight wherever he can. Like,
it's probably Florida, you have Florida to heard he's offensive employee. Coordinator.
Yeah, like Florida's like offensive coordinator. That means we don't have to pay him anymore, right? It's like no official job. I'm not taking a salary.
Yeah,
I still want your money.
I think he'd be an employee of the school. I think to be like a coordinator, I could be wrong, but for that kind of positional coach, I feel like you would have to be teaching something at Lake Oconee or some kind of employee status. But I could be wrong, and it's academy.
I mean, yeah, to be the actual offensive coordinator, I would think so. But it is crazy though. Like 1 year ago today, there was a lot of people that thought Dan Mullen was a better head coach than Kirby Smart. Like that's pretty wild. Now it's like, I would say the vast majority of people think Kirby Smart's the second best coach in college football, and then Dan Mullen's at Lake Oconee. It's crazy. Turntables have turned.
I just feel like the better argument, or the more interesting one to me, is that, like, do you think this coach, with the resources available to him, could win a national title? Like, is he good enough to lead a national title? Is he good enough to be a CEO coach that, if he gets his staff picked off, that he can be fine and reassemble a new staff behind them and keep
is
a...
Is that Dan
keep
Mullen?
I don't...
Is that who you're asking about?
No, I'm just asking, like, when we're talking about Kirby, when you had him at number two, and in the country is in terms of just college football coaches. I mean, I don't have a list in front of me and I don't really do that kind of stuff, but I also just think that like Kirby's clearly one of the elite ones where he's just in the like you just want to have a coach who's in that conversation where it's like if you have to debate it and there's a case for whatever, then you're good. That means you're in good shape. It's you want the coach that you know you can win a national title with. And there are a couple of them, and they're the what ifs that Josh and I differed on, and I know you differed on my perspective on what makes a coach elite. But like, I don't know. I think it's silly to argue about like, oh, who's better, Kirby or Mullen? It's like Kirby's elite. He just won a national title. You can win a national title. He's going to keep this thing humming. But Dan Mullen also got Mississippi State number one in the country. Like, there is something to be said about just getting Starkville to that point.
November national championship.
I'm telling you, he was a great OC with Urban. Like
he definitely was. No one would ever hate on Dan Mullen's, you know, coaching offensive coaching ability, right? It's just, it's like, I wonder, like Dak Prescott, like does he get credit for Dak Prescott, or was it more like, you know, found a diamond in the rough with Dak Prescott? You know, I would argue I would argue Kyle Trask, having Kyle Trask in the Heisman race, who does not appear to be an NFL quarterback, is a way better coaching job than just kind of discovering this diamond in the rough, Dak Prescott. You know what I mean? Like, he's an NFL talent. Like, having a good offense with Nick Fitzgerald, a super limited quarterback like that, that's a better coaching job than discovering Dak Prescott. You know, it's like, I feel like that the Dak Prescott one is always the one that seems to get highlighted. Mm. But I think it's kind of a Will Muschamp scenario. You know, it's like, if you can't win at a place like Florida, then you probably can't, you're probably just a really good coordinator, and that's probably your ceiling. Yeah, it's Florida. Like, it's not like just the best of the best, but it's damn close to the best, right? Florida's up there in that conversation. There's nothing holding you back at a place like Florida. And with the SEC East in general, like, I mean, we all talk about how down the East has been in recent years, like outside of Georgia and basically Florida, like there's not as much competition to, like, that's also to an advantage of the Florida job at this point. So him not being able to get it done at Florida, it's hard to justify him ever being a head coach again, just because, like, it seemed like such a, like, at a core, people just, like, dislike him as a person. It's like, that seems really important. Like, if you just want to scheme some offense up and just be the coordinator or something, that seems like somewhere he can go find a fit and finish out his career. If that's what he wants to do, or he can just hang out with his money on Lake Oconee. But it's hard to see him ever getting a legitimate, like, big-time college football job again, in my opinion. Like, I could see him at a smaller level, like where Jim McElwain is right now. Like, where is he? Colorado State? Central Michigan. Colorado State is where he started. Yeah, somewhere like that, maybe, where it's, you know, it's, you don't necessarily have to have the elite of the elite talent to win those conferences. It can be maybe more about what you can do as a coach. I could see him resurfacing somewhere like that, but it's hard to see him get another big-time Power 5 job.
I mean, if I was Mullen, I would just wait for the right OC job in the NFL. I think he would just be an elite offensive coordinator. Like, Matt Canada's doing that right now with the Steelers. Like, he's the Steelers OC, and we know Matt Canada during his brief tenure at Maryland and was the OC at LSU, and he's bounced around, had a lot of OC jobs. But, I mean, Joe Brady goes through the NFL with the Panthers as OC, and he got let go, and it didn't work out. But ultimately, I think that's the path. But I disagree that he will not get another big-time head coaching job in the college scene. I think if he wants it, I think his resume is still pretty strong. I mean, Florida was in the national title conversation a year ago. So I think he'll land on his feet depending on where he goes. But I also just – he's still pretty young.
He's got a great contact in the NFL. He's got Urban Meyer on the NFL. You know, the NFL teams think so highly of him. So it's a solid reference.
I mean, he would just be, he's a great offensive mind, and I think ultimately with how much the NFL pulls from the college game now and how synonymous high school, college, and NFL really are these days, that I think he'd be a natural fit. I mean, Kellen Moore has just been fantastic in Dallas, so I don't know. I think Mullen, I'm not going to tell a guy what he should or should not do, but I do think the guy will have options. Speaking of options, Jeff Brohm. This week, he said something that was really interesting. Do you remember when the Louisville job came open a few years back when Scott Satterfield took it from App State? That has been a rocky relationship to this point. We'll see what happens this fall. There's a lot of optimism in Louisville going into this fall, and that this is going to be a bounce back year for Satterfield's team. But Brohm, obviously, coached there, played there, and there's always going to be that pull. Kenny Payne, now the men's basketball coach, pull there, and he goes back to Kentucky, leaves the NBA for that job. But Brohm's at a tough spot. He's at Purdue, where he's won a lot. There's an asterisk on what happened in the bowl game this year. Some call it a win. I call it a hedge. I call it a we're not going to talk about it type deal. No one gets a win. No one gets a loss for that particular affair in December, but we'll move forward. Jeff Brohm on Purdue, though, and Louisville. This is from Football Scoop. They pulled this. He was speaking at some alumni event. I think it was at Louisville. And he said, quote, after being at Purdue 2 years, when it came open, it was a tough call. That was a tough call. And he's talking about when Louisville came open. To be quite honest, through my schooling and how I was raised, I believe in at least trying to do the right thing and having morals and values. It just was too early to leave. It just wasn't right. You build relationships. People treat you right. The people there have treated me great. You talk to recruits and they ask me things. Just a lot of things went into it. The story goes on to say that Brom closed his response to the question by leaving the door back to Louisville cracked open, at least for now, it seems. He said, quote, "But obviously now we're on year six. I love this town, this area. I'm in a loveness of Louisville, so anything can happen in the future." That kind of caught me off guard, Matt. The reason I threw this in our show sheet, I was like, that's, you don't hear coaches just openly. I understand the alumni factor, but I don't know. This was a little spicy for me. This was a little spicy, and I don't know if this is to put pressure on Purdue to back the Brinks truck up to keep him there, but I don't know, man. I understand where he's coming from, but it is interesting. What did you make of Brom's comments there?
Yeah, it's interesting to say it was too early to leave. I feel like 2 years does seem too early. Like, I feel like Mel Tucker leaving after 1 year. 1 year is almost like you're not even there. It was just like, this is just like a 1 year thing. Nothing didn't really happen. Like, you guys won't even miss me. Like, everything's cool. I'm going to go find a better job. But 2 years, it's like, okay, we've been building something and just bounce. You had to respect him, like, turn down. I mean, it's like, what's a better job, right? Purdue or Louisville? Like,
oh, it's Louisville, no question.
What makes Purdue's, Louisville? But
Louisville has been, I mean, you have the Lamar Jackson of the world. It's a better recruiting area. It's a better, like, you're
outside
in
of
the ACC.
3 years Lamar Jackson was there, like, the last 20, 30 years of college football. Like, I don't think Louisville's anything better than Purdue is.
I think it's just an easier place to win consistently at. And obviously the alumni aspect, but Purdue's academics is real, man. Their best wideout just got ruled academically ineligible this week. So he's out. The replacement to David Bell is gone for the year. So it's academics at Purdue is a real thing. And Georgia Tech deals with that a little bit. Notre Dame deals with it a lot. At Stanford, there's a Northwestern, you can go up and down the list. Like,
they're all student athletes for sure.
Yeah, but it's also just harder to stay. Like, it's just a harder school to get into. It's a harder school to maintain good grades and be a two sport, like, be an athlete. Like, it's just,
is Louisville a better job than Kentucky?
Football?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you're gonna, you have a better chance to win something at Louisville.
Yes.
But I don't, like, I mean, you get that SEC money, like, that's something serious, you know. So, like,
but if you
being in the Big Ten, kind of puts Purdue on like a, in the Big Ten West too, like their chances they get in the conference championship aren't just, you know, almost impossible. Like, you look at Maryland and Rutgers of the world, like, you're not getting to the conference championship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not going to happen. So. And the Big Ten West, it seems a little different. They haven't gotten to it yet, the last decade or so of Purdue football hasn't been good. But, like, I feel like before that, I mean, they were a respectable program, like Drew Brees, Kyle Orton years. Like, they've had a lot of, like, solid teams in there.
For sure. I mean, Rondale Moore just came through. I mean, they put out players like that. George Karlaftis, he goes in the first round. Like, they produce a lot of NFL talent, but. I don't know. I just, it's also not home. Like, the allure of coaching your alma mater, man, like, I'm sure it's pretty strong. And I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But I'm not pretty.
Like, yeah. I feel like that would be the only place that people wouldn't look at him as a backstabber, even, like, after year two, which he could have done, going to Louisville to the alma mater. Like, you're going home kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think the fact that he actually had the opportunity to do it, like, it might be a hypothetical thing for a lot of guys. Like, I'm sure Mario Cristobal has thought about the opportunity of getting the Miami job for a long time. Kind of like Mark Richt when he lost the Georgia, when he got fired at Georgia. It was like, he seemed like he was so burnt out he didn't need another head coaching job, but it was like his alma mater is open up. Like, I got to jump on that now because who knows when that could happen again, you know? Mm-hmm. So Louisville isn't one of those powerhouses. It could be open again in a couple of years. It could be open next year, you know? Who knows? But it was interesting for him to not rule it out because he did have the opportunity. And you think the longer you're there, the more relationships you're building, right? Like, the more tradition you've built up, more equity you've built up at Purdue. So I don't know. It's interesting that he didn't shut the door completely.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into our main event, Matt Green. FanDuel released a bunch of odds, betting odds ahead of the 2022-2023 college football season, which is great because it adds context to where the odds makers and where folks around the world see college football teams at the moment. Like, spring practice is done. There's still a lot of battles left to be decided, and position battles, like coaching stuff, and we'll see. Injuries are unfortunately a part of this game, and we'll see who gets through the summer unscathed. But there are a lot to go
through. Alabama would have won the national championship if it wasn't for those injuries.
Yeah, I'll give you that, because I am not one of those people that whine about that sort of thing, because it's just, that's how it works. I mean, the NBA,
yeah, it's
right?
Just like, oh, maybe, I don't know, but it happened. it's done.
And that's just part of it, though. You can't turn injuries off. You play the hand you're dealt, and that is all that needs to be said, and you don't need to throw out any sour grapes there. However, there are a lot of odds, so you and I, we picked our favorite lines, our top five favorite lines, and I don't believe we had any crossover on our favorite lines. So
we did not.
I think, as the guest, Matt, you should start with which line first stood out to you that you liked.
To start it off, I got to go week one, Utah, 1.5 point dog at Florida week one. Like, I just think Utah is a better team than Florida. Like, I feel like they're just, like, I'm not no shade at Napier or anything, but I just think week one, like, I don't think Florida's ready for Utah. Like, I think Utah's going to win that one outright.
I think it's interesting because I think Florida's first two games are against Utah and Kentucky, right?
Oh, I'll wait on that one.
Well, I'm saying, isn't that their first two games?
Yeah.
That's a rough way to open the year if you're Billy Napier. If you look at their schedule, I mean, South Florida, they just brought in Gary Bohannon, the Baylor quarterback. Jeff Scott with his biggest portal win since taking over the Bulls job. Like, that's not an easy four-game stretch, because then they go to Knoxville and face the Vols. Like, the first 4 weeks of Napier's season or tenure in Gainesville is just a murderer's row. Like, it's going to be brutal. Like, there's a chance they're 1-3 after 4 weeks. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But I do think it's unlikely Florida. The reason I brought up the Kentucky game is that, like, that line is interesting to me because they're favored by a couple in the Kentucky game. We'll get to that in a second. But Florida is not, I would be absolutely floored if they sweep those two games. They go 2-0. However, my gut tells me they split them, and I just feel like they're more likely to split with you, like, win the Utah game for me, and then just be overconfident because they beat this really good Pac-12 team, and then lay an egg to a team that loves nothing more than beating the Florida Gators because of just how many consecutive losses they had. And it's a
Utah
statement
does
win,
feel like the more likely win. Like, mm-hmm. There's just kind of those variables, traveling across the country, yes, like that whole thing, going to the swamp, like, just, mm-hmm, you know, what is this, September 3rd, I think, is the opening week. Like, who knows what it's going to feel like in the swamp on September 3rd. Like, we could be pushing 100. So that could definitely be a factor. But yeah, just to skip right there to my number two, because it's on there, why we've been talking about it, is Kentucky. They're a +4 in week two. And I like Kentucky in that one, too. I was surprised to see Florida favored in both of those games.
Yeah.
Because especially +4 versus Kentucky, like, I definitely expect Kentucky to be better than Florida this year.
I would agree.
It is the swamp, but they won that. They did win in the swamp a couple years ago. So.
That's a huge win, but it also scares me. Like, I don't want Florida to lose to Kentucky at home because I don't want them coming to Knoxville angry. I do not want that being a thing. I don't want them facing 0-2 in the SEC East to kick things off here, the Napier tenure. I want them to beat Kentucky feeling good, 3-0. I want them winning the first three, and then I want them to come into Knoxville and lay an egg and come back down to earth a little bit.
I would be absolutely shocked if Florida is 3-0. To start the season. Like, I just, it's not like a murderer's row they're facing or anything. I just feel like this doesn't seem like a team that's just ready to win now. Like, I feel like LSU might could surprise some people and be like, no, Orgeron was just that bad. Guys had checked out that much. Like, they seem like they could be more, we just know about the talent LSU gets all the time. Like Florida, like the recruiting is why Dan Mullen got fired. So like the cupboard, if it's not bare, it's not full, right? So I don't see Florida starting that way. Like even South Florida, like you said, like that was a game for what, two quarters last year? Like if they started 0-3, 0-4 of the Napier tenure, like year one, I basically throw out for every head coach. But oh man, 0-2 would be bad, but 0-4, that's rough.
Well, let's throw, I'll do two for me on my side real quick. So yeah. I've got the week zero, which is, I love that Nebraska is embracing week zero football. So this is across the pond. This is in Ireland. Did you know that Nebraska?
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And Nebraska is favored by 9.5 in this one. Like, it's too early for our locks of the week, but Nebraska 9.5 covering that spread against the Wildcat offense over in Ireland. Just lock it in. Like, the Nebraska Cornhuskers kicking things off against that group. Mark Whipple, his first game as OC. You bring in Casey Thompson. I think this will be a much more efficient, just a better football team. I'm pretty high on Nebraska coming in this year. We'll see what happens, but I'm buying a lot of Cornhusker stock right now.
I don't
know
if I could go 9.5 for that, just because that game feels like it's going to be like 13-6 or something. Like, I don't know. You could be right. This could be a different Nebraska offense for sure. It feels like so many of those games that they play overseas just get sloppy. Like, I don't know what the different grass or, you know, what they're doing over there. It feels like the NFL games in London are always just, the field just seems sloppy. So I wonder, I feel like it seems like Northwestern's game, right? They got the long grass. So I don't like Nebraska at 9.5.
That's fair. That is fair, Matt Graham.
I do like them to win though.
Okay.
I'll give you that. Yeah, hit me with your second one.
I need to get Northwestern in the top 100 of offensive efficiency per CFB stats before I'm taking them on a 9.5 point spread. I think that's pretty easy for Nebraska to get a two touchdown.
Could be
lead.
10 zip.
Yes. 100%, and I could see that. Penn State -3 versus Purdue in week one. So Penn State's on the road here in Purdue country. We talked about them a little bit. Jeff Brohm's team's good. They lose, like I said, their best receiving threat to academic ineligibility. I thought there was a lot of fool's gold with this Purdue team. They lost a lot of talent. I think they'll be fine this year. Jeff Brohm's too good of a coach. But Penn State is not going to be in a dogfight this early in the season. There's just so much riding on this year. Sean Clifford comes back into the fold. They've got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. I think they're going to be top 10 in offense and defense this year. Penn State is going to be on a mission. And, I mean, they've got the Auburn game on the road. That's a big out-of-conference game. But I don't think this is going to be a field goal type deal for Penn State, like where they have to kick a late game field goal to escape from the Boilermakers. I'm going to say they win pretty comfortably. And I like that line if I'm jumping on it now. I like Penn State -3 a lot.
Yeah, I can feel you on that one. Also, I have to correct myself. Uh-huh. Florida was beating South Florida 35-3 at halftime last year. So that was not a game for two quarters. So I apologize. That was the Anthony Richardson show last year. So had to retract that for the Gator fans listening. We're not just ganging up on you guys.
Well, Matt, where are we going next? Who do you have next on your favorite lines?
Oh, who do I have? Next I got A&M -8 versus Miami at home. I just feel like there's so much buzz around Miami. It feels like fool's gold to me. Like, I wouldn't be surprised early on, too, in the season. Like, A&M's going to be good this year. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be yet. My gut is Max Johnson, but I don't know. But I just feel like they're going to be, there's going to be a quality team in the SEC this year, and I don't see Miami playing with one of the better teams in the SEC. That's what it comes down to. So I feel like last year, like this might not be Alabama just, you know, taking them to the woodshed, but I think going into Kyle Field, I don't think Miami's ready for that. I think they win this game by multiple scores.
I mean, Cristobal did go into the shoe last year and stun the Buckeyes, if I seem to recall correctly.
This is true. This is year one, though. Like, how good can Miami be year one? I know they're doing a lot of recruiting, a lot of NIL stuff going on, but they still seem young. So Tyler Van Dyke, you know, maybe put the team on his back. You know, we'll see. But I like A&M's chances at home to win big.
I mean, if the town's close and Van Dyke is who people think he is, and there's now some buzz that he can go number one in the draft next year, like, if Van Dyke's the guy, if he's a Heisman guy, then we'll look at this game completely differently this fall. And I think that's something that we have to see is, like, I want to see Texas A&M sort out their quarterback stuff. I want to see this offense humming. I want to see them moving in the right direction. I don't know. Well, A&M's, I would stay away from a lot of A&M lines until I see this group in action on offensively. Like, they got talent everywhere. It's not a question of talent. It's not even a question of coaching. Jimbo's an elite coach. He won a national title. They got an elite staff. But I just, I don't know.
Not a question of talent, not a question of coaching. Sounds like a damn good team to me.
For
right?
sure.
Right? It's gotta
they should be.
They should be a good team this year, for sure.
They should be.
One thing that I think sucks for A&M and A&M fans is the 2020 year is just totally forgotten. Like, it's just completely glossed over. Like, they went 10-1 or 11-1, however many games they ended up playing in the COVID shortened year. Like, a one-loss season where you're playing only SEC teams, like, that's a super impressive year that I feel like just gets kind of swept under the rug. Like, no one really pays attention to it. Like, they had a case for being the four seed and making the playoff that year. So, like, it has such a vibe of kind of how people felt about Georgia. Like, I think Georgia was, you know, collective, like, consistently better than A&M. Like, not going 8-5 as much, but A&M is right there, one of the better teams. We all know how loaded the SEC West is every year. Like, all the signs are there. Like, they're pointing to this team being one of the elites in college football. And I feel like we kind of forget that they were that 2 years ago. And you're just like, yeah, but they're going to blow it like they do every year, you know, and they're going to go 8-5. Like, I'm sure I even said that. But it's I think we're a little harsh on A&M sometimes. Like, I think they have all the signs to be one of the best teams in the country this year. Definitely one of the best teams in the West.
And we just have to see it. I mean, they got a tough schedule, but they play in the West. And I just, Jimbo and that group, they're in the conversation. They're doing everything right. Where if you're an A&M fan, the program has literally never been in better shape. Ever. Like, this is the best. So just, hey, embrace it. Things are good. And just hope a lot of these close games go your way and the offense figures it out. My number three, the Cougs. +14.5 against Wisconsin in week one. I like this, maybe not for what you expect. It's actually because I'd like the Cougs to cover that. Like, 14.5 with this defense, and they promote from within, so they didn't have to institute a new scheme. I like their OC hire. They bring in what was the kid's name? Not Jared Garantano, but their Jaden Delora just went to Arizona, and their core, like, what is his name? He's a FCS kid, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but his FCS highlights are top-notch, and you just think about they're still going to run the run-and-shoot offense, and they're going to be that Mike Leach style, just fun, and the defense is as good as it was this past year, which is really good. I don't know, man. I think the Wisconsin Badgers, the way they're playing, and we'll have to see what happens under center with Graham Mertz, who is a question mark. Graham Mertz, we're still waiting for that to be a fun, consistent thing. I don't know, man. Brandon Allen could run all over the Cougs, and this could be a blowout, and then just a rough game in Madison. But this has all the makings of a cover, like, for the Cougs. I think they'll do well there. What do you think?
I could see it, just because there's always that question with Wisconsin's offense. So, you know, just
Cameron Ward is his name, by the way. I could not think of
his name. So, yeah, just the idea of Wisconsin not blowing them out week one, it definitely makes sense. You know, like, I think that people kind of forget Wisconsin because they kind of wrote them off after the 1-3 start last year. But, I mean, they ended up going 9-4, won, like, 8 games in a row or something. So, I think Wisconsin, like, the offense started, like, they started scoring more points, but Graham Mertz never started doing more in the passing game. They just, I don't know, they just started scoring more points. You're just running the ball, which is an aspect of offense, regardless of what people might think. Offense is not only throwing the ball, you do need to run the ball as well. So Wisconsin is usually able to do that. That's their bread and butter. So if they continue to have a strong running game, maybe Graham Mertz is enough to lead a good offense. But I don't hate the taking the Cougs plus 14.5.
Cameron Ward won the Jerry Rice Award for like best FCS freshman last year. But if you watch his Incarnate, I know I'm mispronouncing
word.
It. Yeah, his stuff was just preposterous. So this dude's going to be a lot of strong Kyler vibes when I was watching him. So we'll see. We'll see what kind of numbers he puts up there in Pullman. Where are we
Chase
going next?
Can we have an infographic? Chase Thomas, Cameron Ward, next Kyler Murray, right there. Put it on the board.
I'm just saying, folks, when you see like all the, it's like the, oh, where did Gardner Minshew come from? Where did this Washington State quarterback that everybody's all in on?
Do you have another one?
No, I'm just, what, Cameron Ward's the next one. Like, he's just going to be a baller in Pullman, and people are going to be like, oh, Pac-12 after dark. Yeah, he'll be trending late at night, and you're like, why is Cam Ward trending? And it's like, oh, he's just putting on a show, and they're down 35-14 to UCLA, and Cameron Ward's still going hard and throwing the ball up there and having fun out there. That's just that's what I think. Ward's going to be good.
Hey, I'm all for it. I'm all for the Cougs. I got a soft spot for the Cougs back in my NCAA days. moving on, my number four, Texas. -1 against Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout. I think Texas is a better team than Oklahoma in 2022, and at -1, it's basically a pick 'em. So I like Texas to beat Oklahoma this year.
They should, man. If you're gonna, it's like the whole Florida, Texas is in that zone with Tennessee is in with Florida with their rival, where it's like, man, if you're not gonna do it this year, if you're not gonna go over the hump and put it all together with year zero Brent Venables and all the roster leaving, Mario Williams and Caleb Williams and all these dudes leaving, like, what when are you going to do it? When's it going to be?
I like that comparison a lot. I feel like that's a really good comparison.
So we'll see. I mean, they should be favored by more. I'm sure it will go up or down depending on how they both teams start the 2022 season. But a lot of pressure on Sark and the Longhorns, and you saw the buzz about like Arch is waiting to see improvement from the Texas Longhorns this fall before making up his mind on where he's going to play college football in 2023. So I don't know.
I wonder, right, if they show improvement and Quinn Ewers is that guy, then is Arch trying to go there? I mean, granted, he's a redshirt freshman right this year, so he could leave after 2023. So he might be only sitting for 1 year, but I don't know. We'll see. Texas still feels like definitely one of the players for Arch Manning, but we'll have to see. A lot of time before then.
Mm-hmm. Ole Miss -10.5 against Georgia Tech in week 3. For the folks that are wondering, so I feel bad for Jeff Collins. I really do, because Georgia Tech had an awful schedule last year, and boy, they have an awful schedule this year, and there's just no path to a bowl game for them. There's just no path whatsoever, and you just feel for Yellow Jacket Country. And I say this with the utmost respect. 10.5 is embarrassing low of a spread for Ole Miss and Jackson Dart and the Lane Kiffin Portal King train that's going to be playing the Yellow Jackets in week 3. Zach Evans and company, like, they are going to run all over Georgia Tech. They are going to win this game. Like, if there's a lock of the week early, it's Ole Miss 10.5. They are not beating the Jackets by only 10.5. It's, I don't know what happened here. I would love to have AD Stansbury on this very program, and I can talk to him about why he scheduled the games that he scheduled the last 2 years. But it's brutal. I feel like you're looking at the Georgia Tech schedule right now as I'm going through this. Are you?
I am. I'm trying to pull it up here.
Look at how bad it is, Matt. Like, it's rough.
Yeah, I mean, they're losing Ole Miss. They're losing at UCF. Who else is at a conference? Obviously, Georgia.
They're out of conferences. Georgia, UCF, and Ole Miss, man.
And Western Carolina's in there, too. But
okay.
But yeah. Yeah, they're not.
How many wins do you see there?
Man, they're not making a bowl game.
No.
Like, you're looking at a 3 or 4 win team here. I was listening to 680, like, on my way to work the other day, And, like, the way Joe Hamilton talks about Georgia Tech is honestly, like, sad at this point. He's just like, yeah, what Jeff Collins is doing doesn't even affect me. Like, he's like, I'm just, he's like that, just disconnected from the program. They're just, like, they seem like they're on the cusp of losing, like, Power 5 status. Like, this is getting ridiculous. And they were, at least were always good at football or at basketball. Like, they would get, like, big-time recruits in basketball. Like, big-time guys here and there, right? Like, a Final Four, get Derek Favors, those kind of guys, you know? But now it's like they're terrible at basketball. So, like, what are you doing? Like, how are you justifying still being in a major conference? Like, they're just – they've gotten so bad. And I don't know how they've gotten this bad. I don't know how the line was at 10.5 for Ole Miss.
That's what I'm saying. That's a steal right now if you can get on that one. Yeah, I mean, shout out to my guy Josh Pastner. He's one of my favorite coaches I've ever had the pleasure of talking to. He's an absolute pleasure. And look, the Georgia Tech basketball program's in good hands with Coach Pastner. And you also need to put some respect on the best college baseball stadium in the country at I've seen so many games with
is that the best one?
Oh, the skyline of downtown Atlanta and everything. Oh yeah, the Georgia Tech baseball stadium. If you have not seen,
well, the best one is definitely App State,
for sure. I guess I'm talking about the
but
big
they
ones.
Got an unfair advantage. For that's sure. True. Just that view in the mountains.
I mean, it's not just the view in the mountains. They put the stadium like in the mountain. It's like they yeah. chopped down the trees around the stadium to like put them in this own little fortress they got going on. But yeah, no, App State definitely a bucket list site for me. But Danny Hall's got the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. They're humming. They've been in the top 25 the majority of the year. But you know, they're okay. They just Paul Johnson, I said it at the time, that Georgia Tech fans were gonna miss Paul Johnson. That was my take. And I just think to win at a place like Georgia Tech, you can't try and build like Georgia. What you have to do is find a niche, whether it's air raid, option, whatever. You got to go, like, you have to be like the Washington State Cougars, Texas Tech. You've got to think outside the box, and you have to run a different kind of operation. And it's just unfortunately not going to work there. But I would be interested.
Like, you thought being good once every 6 years was bad.
Yes.
Just wait and see what Jeff Collins has got for you.
Right. I mean, just pluck. I mean, I would, if I was, I mean, there's just a lot of different ways they can go. We'll see what happens. I don't want to talk about next coach while Jeff Collins is still there. So we'll see. Maybe he proves us all wrong. It's a possibility. Maybe Jeff Sims is the guy and things are awesome. But losing Jahmyr Gibbs is a brutal blow there.
Not a great start.
While
we're bashing the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, let me go to my number five, which is Georgia is a 28-point favorite over Georgia Tech in 2022. I think Georgia could basically just pick their score in this game. What was it, 45-0 last year? Like, in Georgia Tech last year, right?
Or was it? What's the line where you would be like, I don't know about this? Where do you think you would be? What would be the number be before you're concerned about, like, losing money on this game?
I think 35. 35 is pushing it.
Okay.
You know, like, it's but I would probably still take it, you know, because I think it's Georgia Tech. Like, enough said.
It didn't used
Georgia
to be
Tech,
like this.
Georgia.
Paul Johnson was in these games. Like, this was not a guarantee. Georgia knew that it was going to be a pain in the butt to play this team last week of the year, get up for this Paul Johnson annoying offense, and you never, like, it just,
it was basically
like that.
Every Georgia team that Mark Richt ever had that was good smashed Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it was like when Georgia Tech was good and Georgia was bad. And then we got a good game on our hands, right? But it's those kind of, like, solid to good teams that were kind of like you didn't know what to expect, those kind of 9-10 win teams. Those would be the teams that could lose to Georgia Tech, right? Like, those would be the ones that kind of overlook them or whatever the case may be. They're just a scrappy triple option team, maybe an undisciplined team that didn't tackle well or something, or just didn't play the part of the option like the way they're supposed to, things like that. But it's like every year you go to like 2002, like 2007, 2012, like all those like really good Mark Richt teams, they just smash Georgia Tech. Like it wouldn't even be close. And so I think 2009 is honestly like my favorite game, the Caleb King, Washon Ely, we run this state game, because that was actually Although 06, Stafford's freshman year, is up there too, because those are games where Georgia Tech was like top 10 and Georgia was like basically just bad, like 7-8 win teams, and they would still beat Georgia Tech because that's just how – that's the different level that they're on, right? But right now, where Georgia Tech is and where Georgia is, like you've finally seen the last couple years – or I should say last year, because in 2019, Georgia kind of did play around, didn't put a lot of teams away. But you finally saw a lot last year of like a lot of the elite teams in college football, like the Alabamas, the Ohio States do, the Oklahomas do. Like when they're playing an inferior opponent, they make the scoreline look like they're playing an inferior opponent. And I think that's what you've seen Georgia kind of turn the page. Like they seem like a truly elite program now. And when you place a team like Georgia Tech, like, yeah, they're winning by 4 or 5 touchdowns easy. Like it's not going to be close, especially not at home.
I just don't see it changing anytime soon. I don't see there being a path back to this rivalry being respectable and what Kirby has at Georgia right now. I just don't see a path anytime soon. It's just,
especially you got Georgia repping Atlanta harder than Georgia Tech is. It's like that's all Georgia Tech had going for them was the city of Atlanta.
It can't help that NIL especially, and I'm very pro NIL and this, that, and the other, but when you read the Ivan Mazel piece about that everyone should go check out on On3 today, one of the things is just that he quoted one of the guys in there about, like, don't even ask about the education aspect of it. It's just you're wasting your time if you're pitching to these kids, like, what kind of degree program they could be on, what kind of track at this X school. And it's like that was, like, one of the things that would intrigue an Andrew Luck to a Stanford or a player to Georgia Tech was just that, like, hey, we can offer you this kind of elite education and you can also get a full ride scholarship to play football here. Here's this awesome thing. But now that's even been taken away, where it's like, how many kids want to deal with the grind of a Georgia Tech academic calendar while also playing football where there's no path to a winning culture anytime soon? It's a rough situation, I think, on the flats, and I don't know. It just kind of bums me out that the rivalry is this lopsided and I don't see a path out of it anytime soon.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I just don't know. Like, I don't even know where this program goes. Cause I felt like, I'll be honest, like, it's one of my worst sports takes, right? I'll own it. Like, I thought Jeff Collins was going to be the guy to bring Georgia Tech back to relevance. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the next team that would win the ACC, not named Clemson. Granted, I was thinking Clemson would have at least like 2024, 2025. Give Jeff Collins some time to build up a competitive team there. But the way he was kind of selling the city of Atlanta, that's what I've always said Georgia Tech should be doing. And kind of if you could get these, like the third, like we saw the state of Georgia just had more players than California drafted in this most recent draft. Like, that's insane what Georgia's producing at the high school level. And you saw, like, Steve Spurrier's South Carolina teams, like the Kentucky teams of, like, those mid-2000s. Like, they were built on that fourth-tier talent coming out of the state of Georgia. Like, so many teams. Even Vanderbilt under, like, James Franklin would get a lot of those guys that didn't have offers from Georgia that were good players. And now you're seeing, like, even teams smaller than Georgia Tech come in and get some of that talent before Georgia Tech's getting it. Like, you're seeing Central Florida come out and get some before Georgia Tech's getting it. So I felt like even someone like Auburn, like, they're getting a level higher than South Carolina and Florida was. But, like, they would get guys that don't have Georgia offers. Like, there's so much talent to go around in the state of Georgia. I would just think, especially that Metro Atlanta area, you would just think Georgia Tech, you could just throw a rock at a couple four-star prospects a year and just get them on campus. So, like, I don't know. It seems like they could get 5 to 10 of the top, like, 40 players in the top 50 players in the state and start to do something, but they're not even doing that right now. So, like, I don't know. I don't see any future where Georgia Tech is getting better.
I don't either, man. I don't either. This is sad. I don't even know how to end on my version here. Virginia Tech +2.5 against the West Virginia Mountaineers in week 3. I love this for Virginia Tech. Mountaineers,
this is,
man,
in Blacksburg, right?
I think it's in Morgantown, unless I'm misremembering it. Did I look at it wrong? That actually helps me.
I got Virginia Tech. Yeah, it's at home. It's in Blacksburg.
That's what I thought. Okay, originally, yes, which I love. Blacksburg, different kind of environment. Would love for Tennessee to schedule some consecutive home-and-homes there. That would be nice. But look, Brent Pry, I think, is more of a culture fit than Justin Fuente. I think Justin Fuente, I think people are discounting just how good he was out the gate in Blacksburg. He won. It obviously didn't end well there, but he's still a good coach, and I'm curious to see what happens with him going forward. But Brent Pry, longtime DC over there in Happy Valley with Penn State, he was elite this past year coaching the Penn State Nittany Lions defense. Like, he's co-defensive coordinator there, but been there a long time, longtime Franklin guy. I think the culture and the buy-in is going to be immediate there. I think there is going to be just a lot of optimism, and I think Virginia Tech will turn some heads a little bit pretty early on there, and I just like them at home. I think Graham Harrell and JT Daniels air raid that they're going to try and throw at Brent Pry, I don't think it's going to work. I like the Hokies early there. That's an appetizing line to me. A rivalry game, that kind of thing. I like the Hokies in Blacksburg in this scenario.
I'll be honest. I looked at this game and I was I almost picked West Virginia, but the Lane Stadium factor that kept me against it. But yeah, 2.5 point home dog. I can never home dog always seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, especially one like that in a rivalry situation.
Matt Green. Watch out for JT Daniels, man. West Virginia's Mountaineers are a sleeper next year if he can stay healthy.
We'll see, man.
It's a big if.
We'll see. I think I'm just excited for the backyard brawl. JT versus Keaton Slovis, the USC battle for those two. I think that's going to be a fun game that you have to have circled. I don't know. There's so many good games. When we looked at the calendar, the Fox broadcast calendar, ESPN, and just all the big games and how they're scheduling it out, this is going to be pretty electric time. I was fired up, and I was like,
seeing that Georgia Oregon 3:30, mm-hmm. and then Notre Dame Ohio State 7:30 that first week, that's going to be a nice little schedule. I'm curious to see what the noon game is that day, but yeah, you've seen Texas fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Signing the petition to get their game moved from noon, which is at 11 a.m local kickoff versus Alabama. Like, I'm torn on this, to be honest. Like, part of me wants to just troll Texas fans and like, you guys are just the worst. Like, you just, you had like the TV announcement of like your big time game for the season, and you're signing a petition to get the game changed. But 11 a.m. local kickoff, that's so early. Like, I don't know. I can kind of sympathize with them a little bit. After watching a few of the noon game days, like game days being at noon kickoffs, like they did, I think it was like back-to-back, Oklahoma-Texas and then Georgia-Arkansas. I was really digging like College game day being like in the stadium, like right as, like ending as kickoff's about to happen. Like, I thought it was like a cool, although I don't know if they could even do that, right? If it's a Fox, game day might not even be in there. They might have their... priority there.
Yeah,
like Brady Quinn, Reggie Bush, they're not letting you on their turf. You know, Urban Meyer, he's not going to stand for that. So I don't know. I'm curious, but I really liked when the how they did that in a few of those game days, like went right into the game. Like, it's like, this is what we've been watching for the last 3 hours, right? On game day, like let's watch this game now. Let's not wait 8 hours to watch it later.
I also just think it's silly because that's the best game coverage you'll get in college football now. Klatt and Gus, that big noon Fox game is top notch year over year. Like, that's a great spot for you to be in. I understand the 11 a.m. like you laid out, but man, if I'm a fan and I'm not there, give me the nooner. Give me the big nooner. It's the best game. It's the
best
broadcast.
As a neutral fan, I'm all about it. Like, game day ends and now we have a good game to watch right now. We don't have to sit through, you know, Northwestern Michigan State or something, right? Like, we just get right into the good stuff. So I'm all for it as a fan, watching on TV. But, oh, man, what time are you waking up? Like, that's such a big deal for Alabama to be there in Texas. Like, just the atmosphere. I feel like you do kind of lose something. Like, with the Red River Shootout, like, you know that's going to be at noon every year, right? So you're just, you plan your day, you probably have your yearly ritual of how you set up, how you get ready for that rivalry. But something that's special about this one, it feels like you're getting robbed a little bit of, like, that, just that energy around, like, the town. Like, I know I was living in Athens when Georgia had the blackout against Alabama. Obviously, the game didn't go how Georgia fans wanted it. But there was just, like, an energy in downtown Athens that day that it was just, like, national game of the week, game day's here. Like, it's just, it was just an electric atmosphere, and you had an 8 o'clock game. It was just all day for that to build up. I don't like waiting till 8 o'clock. 3:30 is like the perfect, you know, the for time slot in my opinion. But but yeah, I can kind of sympathize with them a little bit. But it's gonna be awesome to get the college football day started off. That's week two, so I don't know what the other big time games are week two off the top of my head, but I'm jacked about it, as Dan Quinn would say.
There you go. There you go. Matt Green, we can find you on Twitter at @Matt_W_Green. And all of his great college football takes and analysis, go ahead and give him a follow there. And we do this every week at this time. Glad to be back, and I'm glad school is off my plate for the summer. So that's good. That is good.
School's out for summer? Is it out forever?
No, I graduate this fall. Yeah.
Okay.
One more
almost
semester.
There. Almost there.
Almost there.
You just don't want to graduate college. I got you, man. You just want to be in college forever. You're not fooling anybody.
I'm not gonna lie. I do love. I mean, I love being on campus. I mean, there was someone I will mention and we'll end on this. I was getting into the elevator. I was telling the fiance about this, which doesn't get old. The whole fiance thing. I like the upgrade from girlfriend to fiance. I like that sound. I was on campus studying late one night, and I went to get on the elevator, and I'm 31, Matt, and these kids, 19, 20, they get on the elevator too. And there was a lot of capital B bro energy going on with the three of them. And, one of them turned to the other and was like, "Bro, do you ever just put on Beethoven when you're studying? It's clutch." And I,
have you heard about this guy, Beethoven? You don't even know about this. Let me show you this. That's funny.
It was a lot where I was just, man, I'm too old for this. I need to go ahead and get my master's and get out of here, because it's just the kids and I, there's disconnect. We have nothing in common anymore. We have nothing in common. But there you go. Matt Green, always a pleasure. Awesome. And I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's all she wrote for the Thursday, May 19th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the 3-hour program today on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you never miss an hour of the program going forward. So go do that. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast. You'll find us there. All of our video stuff that you gotta see, that is great stuff there. Are nearing the 100 mark on subscribers, so go ahead and get us over the top there this week. That would be great. Email this very program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. So be a part of the show that way. Be a part of the show by tweeting at me at @Chase_Thomas, like in the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. You can also read me and all my sports writing at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type in your email, never miss any of my written work on that front, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. This is a daily program here on the Blue Wire Pod Network, so make sure you're subscribed so that you never miss any of the content coming through this very feed. New episode coming tomorrow, so we're back in full force. Grad school is wrapped up for the summer. Finish up my last semester here at the University of Tennessee this fall, but yeah, after a couple days to recharge my batteries, but not really recharge my batteries because I had to do school stuff. So it's just a different use of my mental energy there. So excited to get back in the saddle and continue on here. So thank you as always. And you guys have yourself a great rest of your Thursday. And I'll talk to you guys on Friday. Uncle Derek, how to do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.